So campaign money is distorting democracy in America. We know that. Let's look once again at Ebola, where a virus is distorting the economies of West Africa. The disease is realigning the region of West Africa. Even if the epidemic was eradicated tomorrow, the impact on Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia would still be permanent. Unplanted crops, unmaintained water and irrigation systems, and villages decimated, disrupting transportation and communication networks. In addition, development projects have been stalled and international trade has been curtailed, and the persistent stigma of Ebola in these countries makes that trade hard to resume in the best of circumstances. It all adds up to a very serious problem in West Africa. And joining me now to explain and to report on the documentation of that problem is Francisco Ferreira, who's the World Bank's chief economist for Africa. Francisco, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So let's look at the GDP numbers, which are pretty stark. Long-term impact of this Ebola crisis, even just right now, looking right now, is something on the order of 12% decline?
Well, you know, numbers vary. The 12% number, I think, that you're citing is for 2015. What we're looking at for 2014, our estimates are for Guinea 2%, for Sierra Leone 3.3%, for Liberia 3.4% of GDP. Now, it's important to note that those are for the whole year. So since the epidemic only started in the second half of the year, and it's particularly severe now in the last quarter of the year, the declines right now are probably larger. But for the year as a whole, they'll reduce growth by the order of 3 to 3.4% of GDP in the most affected countries.
And what kinds of things are we talking about? Obviously, it's manufacturing and economic output from agriculture is being affected. Can you itemize a list of things that are most affected in the economies of these countries?
Yeah, what we have data on exactly is things like the fuel sales, so sales of diesel and petrol, which in Sierra Leone are down by a quarter. Sales of cement, which is a good leading indicator of construction, which is also down very substantially in both Liberia and Sierra Leone. We have information on sales of soda and other consumer items, which are also down very substantially. So what it all points to is, as you were saying in your introduction, the result of fear and people's aversion behavior towards the disease, which is shutting down places of employment, reducing people's willingness to go out and spend what little money they have. So there's just a general retraction of the economy across sectors. Tourism, of course, tremendously impacted. No one wants to fly there. Mining, which is a very important sector for these countries. Output declines are relatively low at the moment, but there's a lot of investment put on hold. And so this will impact growth next year, which is in part why the numbers for next year are much more severe.
Finally, before we go, has the World Bank had to postpone or curtail any of its own investments in these nations?
No, on the contrary, we've actually accelerated our investments in response to the need. So we've pledged an additional $400 million to the three countries, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, which is being spent primarily on the immediate response to the epidemic, on building hospitals, on paying for healthcare workers, and on providing equipment for them. Because the most important investment you could have now is on health.
Well, we're grateful to hear that because so many of the governments are stymied in inaction and indecision as a result of all of this. Francisco Ferreira is the World Bank's chief economist for Africa. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The economic impact of Ebola on The Takeaway. As we just heard, the World Bank is accelerating its investments into West Africa by $400 million to respond to the Ebola crisis. But the economic impact of Ebola comes in part from other nations and institutions curtailing their investments, postponing projects, or resisting even going to these regions in terms of tourism. That's what explains the 2% and 3% yearly decline in GDP. The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs estimates that nearly $1 billion would be required to tackle Ebola in West Africa, but less than $400 million of that has been received thus far, not including what the World Bank has ponied up. Joining us now is Ashish Jha, who's professor of health policy at the Harvard School of Public Health. Welcome to The Takeaway.
John, thanks for having me.
So the World Bank is being decisive here. They're on the case, but governments and bureaucracies elsewhere are holding back. What's going on?
Yeah, so I think the World Bank has had a phenomenal leadership role in this. And unfortunately, a lot of governments around the world are missing in action. I think the U.S. has finally, somewhat belatedly, gotten in and has pledged both a lot of support through the military as well as direct funding. But I think Europe, other high-income countries like Australia, Japan, have just been much, much slower in terms of coming to the table.
The public health issue here has been stated over and over again that if you want to protect your own country from Ebola, and everyone can understand how a Germany would want to protect itself from Ebola, a Spain, a United States, the best way to do that is to increase your investments in West Africa, where the source of the disease is causing so much devastation. Yet no one seems to be listening.
Yeah, John, you know, that's exactly right. It is absolutely, it's not just in the interest of global health and caring about the people of West Africa. It's also about caring for our own people, that if we really want to stop this disease, we have to stop it in West Africa. And yet, I think everybody has been looking to somebody else to step in and make the investments necessary to do the job.
What is the international, I mean, when people get together and say, all right, we're going to pony up this amount of money to help this crisis, how does it work? Is there a central agency that accepts the donations? Is there a guideline for transparency for how that money is used? How do these pledges get enforced by someone who actually says, come on, bring it in? I mean, I'm, you know, in public radio, we do this pledge drive thing all the time.
Right. So there isn't one central clearinghouse. You know, we often look to the World Health Organization, the WHO, to really lead on these issues, to declare when something is a true global health emergency, to coordinate this stuff. You know, WHO has not been as effective as they needed to have been. They've even admitted as much. We can talk a lot about why that is, but the fundamental point here is we have not had the kind of leadership we need to bring everybody together and funnel the resources in a way that really is effective.
Is there a disaster that gets people to sit up and take notice? Are hurricanes better than tsunamis? Are earthquakes better than hurricanes? Is there some model that already exists that Ebola is sort of bucking the trend of because it's so filled with mythology and internal kinds of fears?
Yeah, so, you know, when we could all imagine a hurricane, we can all imagine a tornado or an earthquake. It can happen here, and it's a very sudden event. Ebola is sort of a slow-motion train wreck. You know, it's just one of those things where we've been seeing it for months. It's been getting worse. And so I think there's a sense that, like, there isn't a single moment that's getting everybody to act. And yet when you cumulatively look at the situation, it is a disaster on the same level as the sort of big natural disasters that we see.
But there are precedents for helping in infectious disease cases.
Absolutely. And so there have been, you know, I think very effective programs around, certainly around HIV and AIDS, but they took years to mobilize. And the challenge here is, you know, the number of cases of Ebola is doubling about every 20 days. And so the slower we go, the longer we take to make the pledges, to get the money to the front lines, the less effective that money will be. And so there is an urgency here that I don't think we've ever faced before. And the international mechanisms just don't seem prepared for getting it done as quickly as it needs to be done.
I believe you have teams who are involved in direct relief. And also, I believe you have a team affiliated with some other organizations that's working on monitoring genetic mutations of Ebola to make sure that as it finds a human host, it doesn't mutate into some sort of airborne version. Are you getting enough support, and what are you seeing out there in the field?
Yeah, so we have colleagues who are working in the front lines. We have Partners in Health, which is run by Paul Farmer. They are out there. When I talk to my colleagues in Liberia, what I hear is, despite all of these pledges, some very fundamental basic things that they need to do to make sure that the treatment efforts are effective, they don't have the resources, they don't have the people. They still, even as of yesterday, which was the last time I spoke to them, do not have the basics of so much of what they need to be effective. You know, we've been watching this for months. I don't think we can afford to keep waiting until the help arrives.
So if someone's listening, what should they do to make sure that whatever contribution they deliver is actually going to get to some of the places where you've described this frustration for a lack of equipment and resources?
So there are a couple of organizations that have been phenomenal. I mean, just really phenomenal. One of them is Doctors Without Borders, you know, MSF. So if you want to donate money and want an organization that's going to be able to put that to use right away, Doctors Without Borders would be my first choice. But the second thing your listeners can do is call up their congressperson. I mean, I know we say this a lot, but on this one, Congress needs to hear how urgent the problem is and has to push not just the administration, but also get our partners in Europe and other countries to move a lot faster, because time is not a luxury we have right now.
So stop talking about closing the border and send money to West Africa. That's the best way to deal with this in terms of national security.
Absolutely. I mean, the sheer amount of distraction that politicians are capable of with talking about borders and talking about ISIS using Ebola, I think we need to focus. This is not a time for distraction. This is a time where we have a true global health crisis. You know, it's one thing to worry about the disease making it to the U.S. I worry about the disease making it to India and China and becoming endemic there. The economic and health impacts of that are devastating. And we can't sit around and have these sort of useless conversations.
Ashish Jha, professor of health policy at the Harvard School of Public Health. Nothing useless about this conversation. Ashish, thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.